Corey was vaguely aware of the heavy, hand-to-hand fighting going on a few hundred yards away. But with thousands of federal troops in front of him, he was too busy to worry about what was happening elsewhere. For several hours, until the middle of the afternoon, he and Abner knelt side by side and kept up a steady fire. Many of the Yankees were pinned down at the creek, taking shelter behind the near bank, and Corey wanted to keep them there. Every time one of them popped up and started forward, Confederate fire forced him back. Sometimes the Yankees didn't make it to the creek, but fell short of it, riddled with lead. It was a grim, bloody business, but effective. Late in the afternoon, the Yankees pulled back.
"They're giving up," Abner said. "They know they can't lick us."
His friend was full of boundless optimism, Corey thought. If everyone on the southern side was still so convinced of victory, the Confederacy might stand a real chance. Corey couldn't summon up that much optimism anymore, though, no matter how hard he tried. That night, a line of campfires stretched for miles to the north and south, marking the Confederate position. A similar array of fires across the valley showed where the Yankees were camped. Corey and Abner made a scanty, unsatisfying supper on hardtack and a small piece of jerky apiece, washed down with the bitter brew made from roasted grain that took the place of coffee. They slept for a while, then went out to stand their turn on picket duty and stare at the winking yellow eyes that were the Yankee fires. The night passed peacefully, and the next day got underway with only minor skirmishing in the center of the line, where Corey and Abner were posted. To the north and south of Resaca, the action was much different, and sharp little battles sprang up and continued in both places. The Yankees were trying to cross the Oostenaula River. If they succeeded, they would be able to turn the Confederate flank on both sides. As Corey and Abner knelt behind the fallen trees they were using as makeshift breastworks and took occasional pot shots across the valley at the enemy, they heard the rattle of rifle fire and the rumble of cannon in the distance. Abner shook his head.
"There's some pretty good scrapping going on," he said, "and we ain't got no part of it. That's a pretty shame."
"I don't reckon the war's going to run out of fight anytime soon," Corey said. "Our turn'll come again."
"I suppose. Still, I don't like sitting here whilst our boys are doing all the work somewhere else."
That evening, bad news filtered along the line. The Yankees had succeeded in crossing the Oostenaula north and south of Resaca. Once again, Johnston's army faced the distinct threat of being surrounded and wiped out. Orders came to withdraw quickly through Resaca and across the river. Corey and Abner were some of the last men to pull out. They stayed where they were, firing steady at the Federal pickets in order to keep the Yankees from realizing that the Confederates were retreating. Finally, the time came for Corey, Abner, and the other sharpshooters to leave. They tramped across the pontoon bridge that crossed the Oostenaula. All of Johnston's men were east of the river now. They kept moving all night, sliding out of Sherman's trap before the jaws could close. The army turned south, following the railroad, and 2 days of marching brought them to a fork in the road. Hoping to fool Sherman into falling into an ambush, Johnston split his army, sending Hardee's corps, almost due south, down the right-hand fork toward the town of Kingston, while Hood and Polk went southeast on the left-hand fork to Cassville. What Johnston knew, and what he hoped Sherman didn't, was that a road ran between Kingston and Cassville that would allow Hardee's men to quickly rejoin the rest of the army. Johnston wanted Sherman to split his army too, so that the reunited Confederate force could fall on a smaller group of the enemy at Cassville. The plan almost worked. Sherman unwittingly cooperated by dividing his forces, but hesitation and miscommunication among the Confederate command led to the attacks being called off. That afternoon, Federal artillery fire struck hard at the defensive line Johnston had established south of Cassville. Not only that, but realizing what was going on, Sherman acted quickly to reunite his army. Once again, Johnston had no choice but to retreat. The long march through Georgia continued. Corey stood leaning on his rifle as he looked across Allatoona Pass toward the Confederate fort on the other side of the gap in the thickly wooded mountains. The fort was built of stone and bristled with artillery. Down below, the railroad tracks snaked through the pass on their way to Marietta. Corey swung his gaze north along the tracks, wondering how far away the Yankees were. They were up there, he was sure of that. The Confederate Army had retreated for several days before Johnston called a halt here at Allatoona. This was where they would stiffen and turn back Sherman, according to the talk Corey had heard. He hoped that proved to be the case. Already Johnston had retreated more than half the distance between Dalton and Atlanta. If they kept this up, Corey thought, the Yankees would be in Atlanta by the time summer barely got started. Stockard walked up to Corey. "Where's Strayhorn?" he asked. "He's around here somewhere, sir. You know Abner. He wouldn't wander off from his duty." Stockard looked as if he didn't know that at all. But before he could say anything else, Abner came strolling up out of the brush. A chicken dangled by its feet from his outstretched hand, and blood dripped from the fowl's neck, where its head had been wrung off.
"Look what I got here," Abner said. "We're going to eat good tonight, Corey."
He stopped short as he saw Stockard.
Howdy, Lieutenant.
Stockard frowned at him.
"You're supposed to be standing guard duty here, Private. Did you desert your post to go chasing after some scrawny chicken?"
No, sir, not really. I heard something rustling around in the brush over yonder and thought, well, I thought it might be some damn Yankee spies. So, yes, sir, that's just what I thought when I heard all that rustling."
Abner made a sweeping motion with a hand that wasn't holding the chicken.
"So I slid on over there, you see, Lieutenant, figuring I'd catch some spies. But when I got there, there wasn't nothing but this here chicken, just a scratching round after bugs."
"I see," Stockard said.
Corey could tell that he didn't believe Abner's story for a second. But the lieutenant nodded and continued.
"Very well, carry on, ma'am."
He turned to walk off, but paused and looked over his shoulder.
"I'll expect a drumstick from that Yankee spy you caught, Strayhorn."
"Yes, sir, Lieutenant."
Corey chuckled as Stockard left them.
"You're lucky he didn't have you shot for abandoning your post."
"Now, what's really lucky is catching this here chicken,"
Abner said with a grin.
"The whole countryside's been picked so clean by foraging parties that it's a purdy miracle this little fellow is still roaming round loose. We're going to have us a fine meal tonight, yes siree."
The smell of cooking meat drew men to the campfire, where Abner roasted the chicken that night. He shared the feast, such as it was, cheerfully and without begrudging his fellow soldiers. One man brought a banjo he had carried all the way from Chattanooga, and soon the sound of music and singing echoed through Allatoona Pass. It was no secret that the Confederates had fortified the pass, so they weren't giving away their position by singing. Besides, this was the best demonstration of high spirits on the part of the men for quite some time, and the officers didn't want to dampen it. But over the next couple of days, as Johnston waited for Sherman to show up, it became obvious that the wily Union general had flanked the Southerners once again. Scouts brought in reports that Sherman had struck out cross-country and was swinging to the southwest. If he turned to the east, he could strike straight for Marietta. It was like a dance, a delicate and deadly ballet executed by tens of thousands of weary soldiers through heavily forested hills, slashed with deep ravines. The Confederate Army hurried along narrow, winding roads, leaving the tracks of the Western and Atlantic behind, just as Sherman had done earlier. The Federals had crossed the Etowah River already and were bearing down on a small settlement called Dallas. The Southerners reached the community first and set up a line at a crossroads near New Hope Church. Sherman wasted no time in attacking after he reached the area and found the enemy waiting for him. To lead the attack, Sherman selected a division under the command of General Joseph Hooker, Fighting Joe as he was known, who had commanded the Union Army in its stunning defeat at Chancellorsville.